This gentleman works with the man who pretty much invented the industry through his various ventures. These guys are business partners. He's an associate of Dave Meltzer. He himself is very unique in that I'm hard-pressed to find anybody else who's in that line of work who could really also be considered one of the boys. He's a worker himself. He goes out there and wrestles in his spare time as well as covering the business. So he really sees it and understands it from all sides. I could only be speaking of Brian Alvarez of the Wrestling Observer and, of course, his own Figure Four Weekly. It's a pleasure to have Brian Alvarez on the FDH Lounge. Good to have you on, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure to do so. There's so much that's going on right now. It's such an active time in terms of how we have to kind of prioritize, and ultimately nothing can ever be deemed more important than human life itself and tragedies that befall people. So let's start on that unpleasant note before we move on to less consequential things here. I wish that any of us could be shocked by the death of yet another one of these pro wrestlers at an early age, but Lance Cade last week, age 29, and it's one of these things where the world that we live in, of course, this was everybody's first thought, whether they want to admit it or not, what are going to be the ramifications for Linda McMahon and the Connecticut Senate race? So it may seem a little bit unseemly, but hey, it's the question everybody's wondering, so I'm going to start by posing it to you, Brian.
Well, if you would have asked me this about 3 days ago, I would have given you a completely different answer. Lance Cade passed away. He had a lot of drug problems for a long time. There's no cause of death yet, so we can't really say what it was. But, I mean, he had just been through rehab, like, several months ago. And as of a few months ago, you know, people that had talked to him said he's clean, he's looking good, everything's fine. But then, you know, a week ago, he was not looking fine. He was not doing well. Both his wife and his father said that he was not looking good at all, and he ended up passing away on Thursday night. Now, when people first asked me about Linda's campaign, you know, the thing I said was, it sounds bad when a 29-year-old guy dies in the wrestling business, and it is terrible. But if you look at, like, today as compared to the mid-90s, as terrible as the story is, things are still better now than they were in the mid-90s. And obviously, not everything is perfect. What happened with Cade happened, and there are probably going to be more. You know, Umaga passed away earlier this year as well, and there are always going to be deaths of people in wrestling due to various factors, because there are things about wrestling that are always going to be there no matter how you try to eliminate them. And WWE is not perfect, but they have made a lot of positive changes, both with the wellness policy, stuff they're doing for concussions and head injuries. It is a better place to work now, and it is a safer place than it was 10 years ago. Now, with all that said, obviously, as noted, something happened with Cade. Now, if Linda McMahon, if they would have talked to her and said, you know, what do you make of the situation here? This 29-year-old guy in your company died. She could have said largely what I just said right there and added the fact that Lance Cade at one point passed out on an airplane, and he was fired by WWE. Now, per the wellness policy, that would have been his first strike. They could have given him a 30-day suspension and brought him back in 30 days. You know, he could have gotten three strikes before they fired him, but he passed out on a plane one time, and they fired him. They later were going to bring him back. They called him up and talked to him on the phone, and he was not sounding well, slurring his speech the whole nine yards. And he ended up going to rehab as paid for by WWE. Once rehab was over, they did release him. But if you look at the situation, they did a lot to try to avoid this. They fired him when one incident occurred. They paid for him to go through rehab. They did a lot of things for Lance Cade. And if she would have just said this, I think that it would have been, you know, politically the right thing to say. Because, number one, it's the truth. And number two, it shows that while something did happen, the company did very much try to help this person. This was not a situation where he passed out on an airplane, they let him back in 30 days. Maybe he passed out again, and they covered it up. It was not a situation like that. They tried to help this person. Instead, she just did an interview today, and she said, I think I may have met him one time what people do on their own time is their own deal. This would be like accusing a movie company when Heath Ledger died. I mean, she said everything you could possibly say to come off as a completely callous human being. And so today, I'm thinking that this may have a detrimental effect on her campaign, or at least it's going to for a little while here, because she said all the wrong things when she could have just told the truth, and she probably would have come off all right.
Well, as far as the positive points that you made about what the company's doing, Brian, I've got a little bit of a devil's advocate position for you here, in as much as I think we can all look at this and we can classify that there are two different types of controlled substances that we're talking about here. We're talking about the recreational kind, which I think was, again, his downfall, it looks like. But then again, Brian, there's also the gas that, by all accounts, these guys are still on it. Batista would have a job for life if he wasn't delusional enough to think that he could go into MMA. We can go on down the line. You know, for anybody that ever thought post-Benoit, you know, that was going to be the case, I don't know. I mean, now granted, you watch more of it than I do. I watch on a fairly regular basis. I know you watch all the time, so maybe your eyeball's a little more trained than mine, but these guys don't look any different to me, and I think I'd have to be naive to think that there's been that kind of advances in terms of physical training to allow them to maintain those kind of physiques roid-free.
All right, here's what I'll say about that. First off, you are right in the sense that anybody who says that there are no drugs in WWE and there are no steroids or anything like that, they're completely out of their... Actually, I should say performance-enhancing drugs. They're completely out of their mind. I've watched a lot of wrestling of late, and I've watched a lot of wrestling from the last several years on WWE Classics on Demand. I usually, like, go back and review a show every week, and I can tell you that post-Benoit, guys are a lot smaller. I'm not going to come on here and say that guys are clean, but if you watch WWE today and then you pop in a tape from 2006, you will be really surprised at how much bigger guys were back then. Now, part of the problem is that they have instituted a policy that is not perfect. Guys can get medical exemptions. You know, there some of the older guys in particular that were on steroids for a long time and then went off the steroids with the wellness policy, their natural levels ended up so low that a doctor could legally prescribe them testosterone to bring them back to what are supposedly normal levels. If you've got a note from your doctor saying that, it's going to be a slippery road to tell a person that, no, you cannot take what your doctor is prescribing for you. Not to mention there are a lot of substances, particularly growth hormone. Like, you I mean, if you've been following real sports, I mean, tests for growth hormone, if you recall, one person got popped for growth hormone in the Olympics, and then everybody was kind of going crazy about, oh my God, somebody got popped. This, you know, we've got something here. We've got this test that works. But the reality is they only popped one person, which, if anything, is proof that the tests don't work, because if the tests worked, they would have popped a hell of a lot more than one person. So the issue is you've got these drugs that really cannot be tested for, which, you know, guys in WWE that are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, they can afford this stuff. So I think that is part of the issue. That's kind of one of the reasons that I said that it's not perfect, but it's better than it was 10 years ago. There are obviously still guys on stuff, but as far as, like, the unchecked usage of as much as you want, those days are gone.
Well, what a wonderful point you made. It backs up what I was saying about Major League Baseball when they talk about it being roid-free. I've always said, until they're doing blood tests for these designer drugs, don't tell me that baseball's drug-free. And you make the same point about wrestling, I think, very appropriately. On lighter subjects here, the business itself, the big shows of the business itself, the event that is supposed to be the WrestleMania of the summer, if it's that, I don't know. Count me in the vast majority out there of people who seem to feel this way, that if that's what SummerSlam is supposed to be, it fell way flat last week. I was just bored to tears throughout much of it. The main event I found to be very compelling. The smart mark in me is always happy to see Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, back out there. So that was great. But what are your thoughts on this? It just seems like such a massive dropped ball in terms of what the show maybe could have been and what it turned out to be.
I was not blown away by SummerSlam. I think that, I mean, if there's one positive about it, it's that the reason the undercard was kind of lame, I mean, I would have liked to have seen better matches. I mean, these guys, the matches could have been better. But with that said, they had a one-match show. They had a main event that they felt, this is the main event that's going to sell all of these pay-per-views. And when Vince gets in that mindset about a certain main event, the undercard does not matter at all. And from a business perspective, it sucks for fans. But, I mean, the reality is, if you've got that big, gigantic main event, it does not matter at all what you put on the undercard. And so, as much as I would have liked to have seen a better undercard and seen a better build for some of those matches, to me, as long as Vince has a great idea for a main event and he puts all of his efforts behind it, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we saw some really good TV and some really good storylines leading up to that 7-on-7 match. So I'm actually kind of okay with that as long as we get great TV building up one big main event. I mean, we've seen a lot of pay-per-views where they don't even have an idea for a main event, so it's like nobody cares about the main event, and no one really cares about any of the other matches either, and you watch the show, and you think, I just spent $44.95 on a show that was basically a glorified three-hour version of Raw. So from that perspective, I was okay with the show. I didn't like the finish. I think most everyone figured that Nexus was going to win, that Wade Barrett was going to pin John Cena at the end. Mm-hmm. I really felt that Cena beating Barrett, and then really especially the follow-up on Raw where you know, five of the seven remaining Nexus guys were made to look like complete geeks. It just, to me, felt like they really dropped the ball over that two-day period. And maybe they've got some sort of idea. I mean, obviously the deal is that they want to push Wade Barrett, and I think they want to push Skip Sheffield and the rest of the guys. They pretty much have realized these guys are, you know, they're going to be back in Florida, or they're going to be fired, or they're going to be mid-carders. So, you know, it's too bad they decided that as early as they did. But, I mean, they were going to decide it at some point, so.
Well, you wonderfully anticipated my next question, Brian, which was whether or not Monday night they mitigated the damage from Super Cena standing tall at the end on Sunday night there. It's interesting because, you know, you watch this through different eyes. Through the eyes of a fan, I'm not entirely convinced that they did. Watching it through what I perceive as their eyes, it looks to me like they think Monday night, by putting over everybody except Darren Young, it looks like they think they mitigated the damage and basically kept the ball rolling for a continuation of this thing. Am I right?
It's hard to say because, I mean, it's just really hard to say. I mean, with SummerSlam itself, I mean, you have to realize, I mean, you called it the WrestleMania of the summer. Mm-hmm. And if you look back at the history of WrestleMania, I think there was exactly one WrestleMania that did not have a happy ending. It was like Hunter as a heel going mm-hmm. over in a four-way or something like that. And it was a big deal at the time that, my God, there was a WrestleMania main event that didn't have a happy ending. And, you know, with SummerSlam, it may have been the same deal where they thought, you know, the smart fans or the real hardcore fans are going to be upset, but we got to think of the millions and millions of little kids and women and such and such that they love John Cena. And if John Cena can be Superman at the end of the show, these fans are going to be really, really happy and feel like they got their money's worth. And maybe they did. I have no way of knowing what the masses thought. But from a business perspective, to beat Wade Barrett and then the stuff that they did on Raw, I mean, to me it felt like they knew they had to put these guys over on Raw, but they were so scared to do it that they almost should not have bothered. I mean, for the most part, aside from the Sheffield and the Jericho finish, I mean, it was DQs, it was guys running in, it was distractions, it was countouts. It was so lame. And yes, the Nexus guys got their hands raised, but I can't imagine any fan watching that and not seeing it for what it was, which was these guys are geeks, and they're not at the level of these WWE guys, so why should we care about them?
Yeah, and one of the only guys to eat a clean pinfall was John Morrison, which I will never understand, you know, why he's not getting treated better. But to start to bring
actually,
this...
Actually, with Morrison, I'll just say very quickly, yeah. And I actually thought this was going to happen at SummerSlam, and it didn't. And maybe it's not going to happen, but from watching WWE for a long, long time, the beard yeah. and the multiple jobs signals to me heel turn coming probably soon.
I've seen the same psychology out there, Brian, and you know, that's You know, you're not the first person I've heard say that. That's funny. It'll be interesting to see if they're as formulaic as that. I know you've got to go in a minute here, so to bring this kind of full circle, this discussion, what does this tell us? I guess this question kind of answers itself, but I want to get your thoughts on this. It seems to me Wade Barrett and Skip Sheffield, who were complete unknowns, 6 months ago, however long it was, are hotter than anybody TNA's got, where their idea of something cutting edge is 50-year-olds beating up 40-year-olds, reliving, you know, another Horseman ripoff versus the ECW ripoff that is completely second rate to begin with here, where they couldn't even use any footage, they used the real name, you know, because of the contractual things that were owned by WWE. So what are your thoughts on that, though? Do you agree that some of these Nexus guys are hotter than whoever you'd consider the hottest guy in TNA to be?
Yes, and I will tell you actually why this all ties together, why I did not think Raw was absolutely horrible. The thing with WWE and wrestling and any business is that you can only get a certain number of guys over at one time. If WWE is intent on having all of these guys go singles now, then to me, you got to choose a couple of guys, and those are going to be the big megastars that you're going to make. If at the end of the year they only have Wade Barrett and Skip Sheffield over as main eventers, they're still in so much of a better position than they were before Nexus. If they would have tried to get all of those guys over, all seven of those guys, if they would have tried to make all of them main eventers at the same time, in the end, really none of them would have gotten over, and it may have actually hurt the WWE stars. That's one of the problems with TNA is they try to get every single guy over. It was a running joke for a while. They would bring in these guys. They would win titles. They would not lose the title in the ring. I don't know how many guys they had that were supposedly undefeated all at the same time. And it was like, this is why none of these guys are over, because nobody ever wins. Nobody ever loses. Everybody always stays at the exact same level. And really, if at the end of the year, Wade Barrett is ready to headline the Royal Rumble, and at WrestleMania, Skip Sheffield is going to challenge for the SmackDown title, then hey, you did a hell of a job with this angle, and it doesn't matter that five of the guys ended up being fired, sent back to Florida, or they're mid-card geeks now.
Right. You know, Dixie Carter's got all the focus of a kitten with a ball of yarn. You know, months ago, Jeff Hardy was the hot thing, and the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro, and everything like that. And now they're getting shunted aside by, you know, the extreme guys, and unbelievable. They're just hopeless, I'm afraid. But anyways, Brian, as we said previously, you know, you've got so much going on with the Wrestling Observer, with your own Figure Four Weekly, Wrestling Observer Live, with the podcast that you're doing there. Please, we always give our guests a chance to promote. Take this opportunity, anything and everything that people should know about. We've got a link up to your Twitter page here tonight, as well as Figure Four Weekly. So take it away. Shoulder your heart's content, Brian.
All I got to say is head to WrestlingObserver.com. That's the website that Dave Meltzer and I do together. We have daily news updates, we have columns, and we have a ton of radio shows. If you love wrestling and MMA radio, we do about 15 to 20 shows per week that are in our members area. It's $10.99 a month, but you get every single show we do, plus every single show we've ever done dating back to 2005. So there's about, 10,000 hours of wrestling and MMA audio up there for the one fee. So check it out if you love it. We got some free shows up there as well, so you can just click those and download them and check them out. And if you like them, you can maybe consider signing up. So WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. There's tons of stuff up there, so check it out.
Excellent. And Brian, again, you know, you being, you know, business partners with the guy who basically invented the business, I don't know how too many people in any line of work that really have that kind of imprimatur. I guess that really kind of says it all for you right there. Excellent stuff. We enjoyed reading it and partaking of it. We enjoyed having you on here tonight. We'd certainly love to do it again, Brian.
I'd love to be on any time. Just let me know.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Brian Alvarez, everybody, of WrestlingObserver.com and Figure Four Weekly, as well as other fine publications and websites as well.